Get ready to ditch those notebooks and upgrade your brain power. In this episode, we're diving into the world of note-taking, where your ideas can blossom into a thriving knowledge garden. User Testing's Leah Hogan talks with Jorge Arango about his new book, Duly Noted. They uncover how digital note-taking can supercharge your thinking, both on your own and when collaborating with a team. They also discuss AI's role in note-taking. Tune in and get ready to transform the way you capture and build upon your brilliance.
Welcome to Insights Unlocked, an original podcast from User Testing, where we bring you candid conversations and stories with the thinkers, doers, and builders behind some of the most successful digital products and experiences in the world, from concept to execution.
A quick shout out to the growth team over at Ancestry. Maria, Vlad, Kate, and Anise, nice work. Ancestry had faced challenges in onboarding its free trial users into paid subscribers. Through testing, they found small friction points that hindered users from getting value from the product. The team realized the need to set clear expectations and showcase product value early on. After a year of work, they successfully reduced same-day free trial cancellations by 20% and increased overall revenue from new users by 6%. Nice work. You can see their video over at usertesting.com. Now, on to the episode. Welcome to the Insights Unlocked podcast. I'm Nathan Isaacs, Senior Manager for Content Production at User Testing. And joining me today as host is User Testing's Leah Hogan, Principal for Experience Research Strategy. Welcome, Leah.
Thank you, Nathan.
Our guest today is Jorge Arango. Jorge is an information architect, author, and educator. For the past 25 years, he has used architectural thinking to bring clarity and alignment to digital products and services. He's the author of Living in Information, Responsible Design for Digital Places, co-author of Information Architecture for the Web and Beyond, and host of the Informed Life podcast. Besides consulting, writing, and podcasting, Jorge also teaches in the Graduate Interaction Design Program at the California College of the Arts. Welcome to Insights Unlocked, Jorge.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Great. So I'd love to start today's conversation talking about your new book, which I enjoyed reading very much, which is Duly Noted, Extend Your Mind Through Connected Notes. And, you know, as we were preparing for this conversation, one of the things that we discussed is, you know, you come from the background of having been in the information architecture space, and a lot of the listeners will have, you know, a lot of experience actually doing research. And I wanted to explore a little bit about your perspective around how you kind of think about organizing your personal note-taking style, and then how you rationalize that with your professional style, which is more likely to be in a group setting.
Yeah, there's a lot there to unpack. One way to get into this might be to say something like, well, why would an information architect, you know, someone who's working primarily in the user experience design field, why would they write a book about notes, right? That might be another way to put it. And maybe another dimension to this could be, what do you mean by notes? Because as you're saying, like, the book is very focused on personal note-taking, but in designing things, we often take notes with others, right? So one of the cliches in the field is the wall or the whiteboard covered in sticky notes. And we use that to document and synthesize learnings from, for example, research initiatives or to brainstorm. There was a moment in my professional development where I had a realization, and it's a realization that didn't come innately to me. It's something that I learned about in reading other people's work. There's a book called Figure It Out by Carl Fast and Steven Anderson. And in that book, they highlight work of other people in the cognitive science space, where folks have been postulating for a while the notion that thinking is not something that happens exclusively in the brain, right? So when we talk about design, and research is a part of design, right? We're talking about knowledge work. We're talking about making things through our cognitive abilities. So the how do we think is a pretty important thing to be focused on. And the realization I had in reading Carl and Steven's work and all the stuff that it unpacked is that thinking does not happen exclusively in the brain, in the meat computer, right? Thinking is something that we do with our nervous system, with the brain and our nervous system, and the world. Our bodies are a big part of how we think. When I was in architecture school, one of the things that we learned in architecture school was to sketch, to put our ideas onto paper. And the act of sketching is not just about recording things that are going through your mind. The act of sketching is somehow thinking with your hands, thinking with paper. And note-taking is a form of thinking, much like sketching is a form of thinking. And we can do it personally, like you mentioned, by taking notes in a notebook that are just for us. But we can also do it in group settings, such as when we are synthesizing learnings from research interviews, for example. But that's where I would start. We think with things. We think with the world. Thinking doesn't happen exclusively in the brain. And notes are a very convenient and accessible thinking mechanism. It's a way of expanding our cognitive abilities.
Yeah. I think to follow up on that and dig a little bit deeper on that. So my first introduction to kind of the space of like note-taking and also keeping notes forever was in the Q&A session for Sam Ladner's presentation at Advancing Research in 2022 on how research can drive strategic foresights. And I asked this question because, you know, you can see, if you could see me, behind me there's a ton of paper, right? I have a stack of notebooks that go back like decades, right? I have paper everywhere. I have lots of sticky notes, lots of things. So I'm a big believer in note-taking. And I asked the question about, like, how do you manage all that? Like, when do you get rid of notes? And she said, I never get rid of notes. And I had a moment of panic because I was like, how do you keep a household, you know, full of that? And you talk about how to do this digitally and you have some great exercises about it. But I wanted to get a little bit of feedback or just reflection on the concept of the knowledge garden and how managing your notes in the different ways that you might use to, you know, articulate, you know, your thoughts and ideas, can manifest in a really effective way for folks.
So this idea of the knowledge garden is central to this book. And it's obviously a metaphor, but the idea is that you have, I'm going to use the phrase a place, right? So the garden metaphor is not arbitrary. This is a kind of place that you can go to do your thinking. And as with a garden, it's something that you must tend. And it's something that is also not meant to be a passive thing. When you steward a garden, that's something that you're doing kind of for the long term. That might seem like an odd metaphor to use for note-taking. And much like you, most of my life, I took notes on paper. My career in note-taking started at school, as it did for so many people, right? And when I was in grade school, we would take notes using three-ring binders. We had these, you know, for our other folks who grew up in the 80s, you know, they might remember Trapper Keepers, right? Like that's the image in my mind from the start of my note-taking career. And the notes that I took in those Trapper Keepers were meant to help me take down what I heard in class. Like they were like lecture notes. And when the exam passed for that class, I had no further use for the notes. And I think that that's how a lot of us think about note-taking. We must first acknowledge that even if that is the only way in which you take notes, to just like write something down for the moment that you don't plan to keep it for the future, even that has its use, right? If you buy into this idea that we think with things and that you're somehow thinking with your hands and brain while you're doing this, then the very act of putting pen to paper is valuable, even if you don't plan to keep the thing. So that's just worth noting, pardon the pun. But one of the things that computers have made possible is effectively infinite storage. There is very little reason to get rid of stuff given the amount of storage our computers have, right? There's no reason to ever delete anything ever again, right? If you have the ability to search back or browse through the things that you've taken, the notes that you've taken down, then all of a sudden you have this repository that can stick around for a while and that doesn't take space in your bookshelves, right? I too have bookshelves filled with hardcover notebooks. You know, I'm not a fan of Moleskines, but I like Leuchtturm notebooks, right? And so I have like bookshelves filled with those, and they take up a lot of space. So there's a limit to what you can do with paper, but we don't have such limits with digital stuff. Now, that's assuming that you're taking the same kinds of notes digitally as you are with paper, meaning like handwritten notes. And you can certainly do that. You know, there are apps for iPads that let you take notes by handwriting, and you can search them, and you can, you know, with a little bit of careful naming, you can find stuff later. But there are also tools available to us now that allow you to create a type of note that was not available with Trapper Keepers or even with handwriting apps. It's a type of note that is more of a hypertext, you know, to take out, you know, to trot out a Sunday term, but basically notes that are connected to other notes and that effectively let you build something like a knowledge graph of ideas. And that's effectively what I mean by a knowledge garden. It's a knowledge graph of notes that you've taken on different subjects that are connected in ways that allow you to extract more meaning through connections, spotting patterns, finding insights in ways that you would not be able to do if you were just writing stuff by hand and stuffing notebooks on a shelf.
Yeah. And that's, I think, a really provocative concept, right? Because, you know, for once, that means that, you know, kind of like in the history of the world, you can create digital notes, share them with other people selectively. And then I think you make a really great point in the book. It enables you to develop ideas alongside other folks because it gives you an opening to say, I've got this germ of an idea. I'm going to start to kind of synthesize it and develop it, but then iterate it. And even blogs, I think, you know, in this kind of way of thinking, function in some sense as a means of note-taking.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that there are blogs that are kind of like that. They're not written for anyone but for the author, right? And it's just like I'm dumping my thinking onto this thing that's going to be published online. And the act of writing is an act of thinking, right? Like when you're going to write, particularly if you're writing in public, you think differently about things than if you just have all, you know, the thinking happening in your head. The shared aspect of this is really interesting. For me, when I'm taking notes personally, when I'm, let's say that I'm researching a subject, like when, you know, when I was writing Duly Noted, I did a lot of research for that. I read a bunch of books. I interviewed people. I had all this material, right? And the very act of sitting down and typing notes about my research helped me think about what I was writing. It helped me organize my thoughts. It helped me prioritize ideas so that I could bring the most important ones to the fore. And that's an example of this notion of like thinking with things. Now, that's being done at the personal level. And we can also do that with other people, right? Again, that the example of the whiteboard and the sticky notes on the wall. If you think of the notebook as a way of extending your cognitive abilities, the whiteboard and the sticky notes on the wall take that to another level in that they not only extend your cognitive abilities, they allow other people to participate in that act of cognition with you somehow, right? It's almost like you're building a shared cognitive environment. And the act of seeing something on a wall, like, and I've had this experience, right? And I'm sure that folks listening in might have had an experience as well, where you have this kind of vague idea in your mind and you say, let me draw it for you. And you go up to the whiteboard and you make a little diagram. That little diagram is a very important cognitive artifact that brings everyone to the same page, so to speak. You know, it aligns people's thinking. And, you know, someone else in the room might say, you know, you're missing something here. There's this other aspect to this that it does not appear in this little diagram. And then you draw a line and you say, well, this, you know, there's this other thing over here. And then someone else might say, well, there's this concept that is more important than this other concept. And you might move a sticky note and deprioritize or reprioritize, or you might cluster sticky notes, right? Those are all acts of shared cognition, and they're incredibly powerful, right? There's something about seeing your ideas out in the world that allows everyone to align and to develop shared meaning in a way that you can't do just by talking and gesticulating, right? So that's something that I don't go into too much depth in the book. There's chapter 10 does cover collaborative note-taking of this sort, but it's incredibly important, particularly for user researchers, right? Where you're often in a situation where you're being asked to derive insights from interviews or from things like desk research, right? So it helps to have something where the team can come together and express their ideas.
Yeah, just prior to today's conversation, I was on a call with one of our user testing customers, and we were talking about how do you synthesize information more quickly? And the first thing I said to them was, real-time note-taking. And it's really like you're collaboratively putting together like what people said, your impressions, and you're starting to do some early synthesis. And sometimes it happens like in the moment where you've got, say, a live interview with someone and you're starting to capture things. But also I'm seeing teams like kind of watch a session, like watch an interview, and then come together afterwards after they've watched several interviews to have collective note-taking sessions where they're doing a lot of that synthesis in that shared whiteboard type of environment. And I think that, you know, that alignment piece is the piece that is probably the most important, because especially in those moments where you consciously say the purpose of this time that we're spending together is to come out with next steps and alignment and a recognition of what we learned. It's such a powerful exercise.
Absolutely. I've been in research sessions where, especially during the pandemic, I've been in research sessions where there was real-time capture happening in shared digital whiteboards, things like Miro, right? Or FigJam or Mural. First of all, there's a really, really interesting dynamic that happens when you're doing that. One is that if you are the interviewer, and I have to say I've been in those situations both as an interviewer and as a note taker. And when you are in that situation as an interviewer, I'll speak in the first person. When I am in that situation as an interviewer, I am trying to focus my attention on what the person is saying, right? I want to be sure that I'm listening carefully. And it can be really hard to balance listening closely and writing things down. It's one of the hardest things about this, right? You want to be there. You want to be present. And if you have to shift your attention to the notes, then you might lose track of what the person is saying, right? Like it's always like you're thinking like a couple of steps behind. It's like, I need to catch up what this person said, and you've missed the next thing, right? Now, I'll give a parenthesis there, which is that in my research for Duly Noted, I asked people why they took notes. And one of the unexpected answers that I got was that some people took notes to keep their hands busy. And the idea there was, if I'm not fiddling with my hands, it could be even like doodling, not even like actually writing things, but doodling, then I can't listen properly. So there are situations in which note taking can help you focus. So I'm just giving that as a parenthesis there. But for the most part, for many of us at least, there is a balance to be struck between listening and paying attention and taking notes. And when I'm an interviewer, it's helpful for me to just focus on what the person is saying. And it's easier if I know that someone else is capturing what they're saying. And the other interesting aspect of this is that reading those notes helps me kind of rediscover things that I heard during the interview, but maybe didn't stand out to me. But the fact that they stood out to my colleague helps me just kind of consider whether they were more important than I thought they were at the moment, right? So again, it's a very, very valuable means of like shared cognition, right? Like you're tapping into somebody else's cognitive abilities, which is super powerful. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of this, which I found incredibly powerful, is that when we did these shared interview note-taking sessions, we would start with a pre-structured board so that we would have a protocol for the interview. And you know, we didn't have to have a script necessarily, but we did have certain things we wanted to learn, right? And we would do things like pre-structure the board so that we would have spaces for each of the beats that we were trying to get to. And seeing the virtual sticky notes populate the board in real time is helpful to just have a visual reminder of what we've talked about and what we haven't talked about, right? And you can see it's like, well, I'm seeing a lot more notes on this part of the interview than on others. It's almost like it gives you like a visual of how the interview is going. And even if you're not doing synthesis or insight generation on the fly, it gives you like a map to the interview session itself. So again, these are incredibly powerful cognitive tools that are available to us through these digital systems, right?
Yeah. And I think that's such a great point, because it really just underlines the fact that a lot of the work that we're doing is about just bringing people together around an idea, and just having that collective synthesis moment is really special. And the other thing that occurred to me is, you know, Indy Young talks a lot about like, be there in the moment, do the note taking later, and being present. So, you know, I guess I just want to put out there's alternatives to live note taking that are really just as valid.
Absolutely. Just to add to that, I was saying earlier that we have all the storage space that extends to audio as well, right? And video. Like we can, you know, we can record things. We have AI that can transcribe things, right? Yeah, we have a cornucopia of tools now that we can use to do this stuff and be in the moment.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And I would love to explore this a little bit more, because, you know, obviously we're into the second year post, I think, the really revolutionary moment that ChatGPT was released in November of 2022. And I think that, you know, in the spaces of both personal as well as, you know, in the professional setting where we practice, How do you think about what's in bounds, right? And what works and what strategies might help us to augment how it is that we think, and also make sure that we're providing transparency and clarity around authorship and ownership of IP?
Yeah, it's these are all very, very tricky questions. We are living in an incredibly exciting time. I started my career in what we now call user experience design in the early to mid 1990s. I'm now dating myself here, but and I have not been as excited about a new technology as I am about AI since I saw the web. I'm talking specifically about generative language models, things like ChatGPT, right? And you were referring to particularly ChatGPT, which in some ways was kind of like the World Wide Web moment for this technology, right? In that the large language models had been around for a few years before then, but putting a chat-based UI in front of the thing made it go viral because it made it so accessible to people. I don't think I'm exaggerating by saying that this might be one of the most useful tools ever invented. And if you buy into this idea that we think with things, all of a sudden we have access to this thing we can think with that is the most powerful thing. It's the most powerful thinking thing that anyone's ever seen, right? And it can be used to augment our cognitive abilities in previously unimaginable ways. And it can be used nefariously to do things like spread misinformation, create deep fakes. There's all these, as with all powerful tools, it can be used in very negative ways. I'm not sure yet what the boundaries are. This technology is still very emergent, but I'm very interested in developing guidelines for myself and learning from other people. For example, there's a guideline that I heard from Simon Willison, who is a developer working to create open source tools to help people work with AIs. And he said something, I'm going to paraphrase, but he said something like, you shouldn't publish something that takes a longer time to read than it did to create, right? That seems like a good guideline to follow, right? And what that implies is, don't just publish the stuff that the AI spits out, right? It's like, use it as a thinking tool so that you can write something better. The way that I talk about this in the book is, you might think of there being a continuum between not using the tool at all, and then using the tool completely to replace you. And what I'm aiming for is somewhere in the middle, where you're using the tool as a kind of super secretary, this technology that helps you think through problems, research the space, have a conversation with something, right? Like this notion of rubber ducking, where just the act of formulating the question helps you think through it, right? But this thing doesn't just listen, I'm going to use the word listen kind of in air quotes, right? But it doesn't just take your question. It can actually give you interesting answers that can prompt ways forward. I'm using it in all sorts of different ways, including things like, hey, copy edit this text from me, right? Like, I'm not asking it to write the thing for me, but just like look for spelling or grammar mistakes. So I think that we're still kind of working through what are the different ways in which it can help us. I'm firmly in the camp that these things can help us think better, and also fairly strongly believe that we should not use them to just publish the stuff that they write directly. I want to use it to augment my thinking so that I can write better and not have it write for me.
Yeah, I strongly agree with you, and I also think that it, hopefully that approach, that way of thinking, settles people who are concerned about humans being overtaken by computers, right? There's a lot of value in the brain and how it synthesizes information, and it is much more creative than any AI could ever be. So,
yeah,
that's great. So, yeah. Thank you so much for your time today, Jorge. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Just for our audience, how can people learn more about you and your work?
Well, the best way to learn more about me is at my website. It's jarango.com. So my first initial and last name.com. And from there, you can find book and you can find information about the books. And you can also see links to my social media accounts where you can get in touch.
All right, great. Well, we will share links to everything that we talked about, all the books and, you know, some of the references that we spoke about in the show notes. And we'll also make sure that we include a link to your book. And thank you so much again for joining us today.
It's been a real treat. Thank you for having me.
Want to keep the conversation going? You can find the show notes at usertesting.com/podcast. If you haven't already, don't forget to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, or Google Play so you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed today's show, please share it with a friend or leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And until next time, this is Insights Unlocked, an original podcast from User Testing.